Yo, what's up, everybody? We're back. It's been a couple of weeks. We took a little break last week. Had a busy weekend last weekend. There's a lot going on here and elsewhere. And sometimes the time just slips away before you even realize what's going on. We are coming on the heels of two very long episodes previous to this. So this one is going to be, I'm going to call it a quick and dirty episode. We're going to try to keep this a little timely this week. Mainly because we still have a lot going on here. There's a lot of things in flux at the shop right now. Possibly the most important of all of them being the soon to arrive baby from our main man Guthrie Newman over here. He's a miracle of modern science. He's giving birth to his child soon. I'm just kidding. Guthrie is about to be a dad, and we're all really excited for him. And you can almost cut the anticipation with a knife here. It's a day by day thing. I'm nervous for him. I'm excited. But that's kind of the big thing here. When the baby comes, Guthrie will be probably taking some time with the fam and trying to catch up on some sleep, I'm assuming. But I am about to leave on a trip for the next week or so to San Francisco. So it might just be Matt running the show for a couple days, depending on how this whole baby thing shakes out. Not that any babies are going to be shaken in the process. You're not supposed to do that. Yeah. Just so you know, Dad. So it's exciting. There's a lot going on here. We have a lot of new stuff in the shop this week too. We are kind of, even though it just kind of dumped a bunch of snow on us last night, we are still looking forward to spring here in Milwaukee. We're just kind of feeling those vibes, getting some new cheeses in house throughout this week. We've got some new glass pours on the list, and I'll kind of go over a couple of those with you on the show today, just kind of highlighting some cool stuff. I want to give a brief report on the expedition down to Tre Bicchieri in Chicago this past week. On Wednesday, I traveled down to Chicago with our friends Paul and Lisa from Good Kind. And as is typical of our trip down there for one of these events, we stopped off in Chinatown for some food first. We usually like to hit up a place known as QXY for some dumplings, but they were inexplicably closed. So we went to our backup fave little spot, Banchan, and had some wings and kimchi and some excellent Korean food. Snack style, really. I mean, you know, people tell me that, you know, man cannot live on Korean fried chicken wings alone, and I am trying to prove everyone wrong, apparently. I think I've eaten banchan wings like two or three times in this calendar year already. I'm going to have to take a break at some point. They're just so damn good. It's the potato starch, I'm telling you. It just adds the crunch layer, the crunch factor. We went from there to the event. And we talked about this a little bit with Lisa on the last episode, but Tre Bicchieri is a pretty big wine tasting trade show. I would say that there were probably, if I had to hazard a guess, About 500 to 600 wines there, maybe 400 to 600. There was a lot. It's about 100 tables. Each table has between 3 and 6 different wines to try. And it's a little intense. There's a lot of people there, people from restaurants and bars, importers, distributors, winemakers, everyone in between in the biz, is kind of going around and trying things. And, if you're a fan of Italian wines, like I am, you know, it's a lovely chaotic sort of thing. People there, like, it's Chicago, so it's a bigger city, but then you've got like a bunch of Italian people in the mix, and like everybody's, well, not everybody, but like a lot of people there are just like rocking like the coolest, most styling clothes. I saw some really cool hats there, and I actually like complimented this dude on his hat. It was like this big, like wide brimmed, like blue suede hat thing. He looked like he was from Jodorowsky's Holy Mountain. And as I was complimenting him, this other dude came up to me. He's like, "What about my hat, man?" I was like, "Your hat is really cool too, dude. Like, way to go. It's awesome." But yeah, people get a little shiny after, you know, 3 hours of tasting Italian wines. I'm no exception to that. I spit as often as I can. You know, that's, yeah, contrary to other rumors you might have heard. But, you know, it's COVID, so it's like, I don't know, do I spit into this bucket with everyone else's spit? Or do I spit it into this little cup? Or do I just kind of, like, take a sip and dump shit out? So, I don't know. I wasn't, like, super, super hammed, but I was definitely feeling pretty happy by the end of it. I had some favorites that I really liked, and I'm not going to really go into those today. I brought some brochures back to Voyager to kind of share with Guthrie. I met a lot of really cool winemakers, young winemakers, who were looking for representation in Wisconsin. And hopefully, you know, we can talk to some friends and maybe pull some of these wines up here from Chicago or elsewhere. So stay tuned for that. Coincidentally, that trip with all of the, like, Asian food vibes and Italian wines is kind of dovetailing nicely into my upcoming trip to San Francisco. I'm actually leaving later today. So another reason why this episode is going to be a little more brief, I still have to pack all my shit. Which is, you know, whatever. It's t-shirts and, you know, some layers and stuff. I'm not too worried about it, obviously. But I've been doing some research on some places to check out in San Francisco, and I'm really excited to get down there. And basically, it's like really great Asian food and really great Italian food. And that's my kind of town. I think I'm going to do okay there. I'm excited. The last time I was in San Francisco was for a food trade show called Fancy Food. And it's a huge event. It makes Trebicchieri look like, I don't know, really small, I guess. But I didn't even get to see the Golden Gate Bridge when I was there. I never saw the ocean or anything. So this trip is going to be fun. I'm going with my partner, and we are going to eat and drink our way through San Francisco and check out some redwoods and probably some dispensaries. Just saying. Today, on today's show, I did want to talk about a few things that we're really excited about at Voyager. And in the spirit of Trebicchieri and San Francisco, we're going to be talking about a couple different Italian wines today. Surprise, surprise, if you know me, it's just kind of like, I guess, maybe part of my comfort zone as a wine drinker, wine buyer person. And we're also going to try a new Amaro, and we'll get into that a little bit after the wine. Yeah, it's going to be cool. We have a white and a red. We also have a really special cheese in shop right now that I'm really excited about. It's a cheese that I've been looking for it in Milwaukee for probably 15 or 16 years. And I first saw this cheese. It's called Roncal. I think you have to roll the R for sure. It's a Spanish cheese. It's from the Pyrenees. Like the Basque section of the Pyrenees. And I first heard about this cheese on an episode of Jose Andreas' show on PBS back in the day called Made in Spain. And he was using this cheese. First off, this show was really fucking cool. And I don't know if you can find it on YouTube or whatever, but I want to say, like, maybe ahead of its time for a cooking show, in that he was, this is, like, probably 2005, maybe, doing, like, tapas and small bites and, like, shareable stuff in a cool way. And what he would do is he would present you with a tapa, and he would go through each ingredient, and then, you know, all of a sudden he'd be like magically transported to this town in Spain where this product is from, and he would meet, you know, the cheesemaker or the person, like, you know, the butcher who is processing the meat or whatever, you know, like just all aspects of each tapa. He would go and like meet the people who actually made it, and then he would magically fly back to Washington, D.C. in his studio kitchen and put it together. Pretty cool show. Really, it was probably my first kind of introduction to Spanish food. And I guess it's, you know, he's not a bad guy to have that experience with. So he used Roncal in one of his tapa dishes. And he described it as kind of like Manchego's, like, you know, older, more refined brother. And I don't think that's a you know, far off description. I would say that there's definitely some like aged Manchego vibes with this cheese. This is a harder cheese. It's very firm. It's kind of got like an ivory color to it. It's a raw sheep's milk cheese, and it's, I don't know, it's really good. It kind of reminds me a little bit of Pecorino in a way. Like, there's, it's definitely got like a butterscotchy kind of like lanolin sort of nose on it. And when you eat it, it like, it just has like a really nice melting point. Like, it just kind of gets a little fudgy on your tongue in like a really nice way. This is the first Spanish cheese to obtain a DOP status, or like a kind of special protected guaranteed seal of approval of quality. And for good reason. This is a really just elegant, like, it's elegant and rustic at the same time. I don't know how they achieve that balance, but it's just there. And I think a lot of it is probably just these sheep being at like higher altitudes for their grazing, because there's just something really beautiful and unique about this cheese. I would use this in place of pecorino for something like a cacio pepe or in pasta dishes. Honestly, like, I'm just kind of eating it by itself right now and loving my life. Come by the shop. It's here. We've got it kind of chopped up into some really manageable pieces. You know, you're not going to have to buy a quarter of a wheel or anything like that. I when I portioned this the other day, I like snuck a few pieces and I was like, oh man, can't wait to get back and do an episode about this cheese. But it's here. I don't think that it's been really represented around Milwaukee very much. And I encourage you all to come in here and try some, well, some wine. Speaking of, since this Roncal cheese has a bit of a Pecorino vibe, I thought it would be pretty safe to pair with a couple of Italian wines. The first wine that we have today is from Campania, which is on the western coast of Italy, just south of Rome. The biggest city in Campania is Naples. And I guess if you're Italian, you'd consider this part of southern Italy. But it's the northernmost southern part of Italy. This is the land of limoncello and, you know, 3-minute pizzas, and Maradona in the 80s, 1980s. I think Maradona was playing for Naples. Either way, I was just a young lad during that time. But yeah, we have a Falanghina by a company named Terre Stregate, which roughly translate to the land of the witches, or, you know, the witches' land. There's an evil eye and a crescent moon on the label. It looks really sexy. And, you know, everybody's about that, like, kind of witchy, culty vibe these days. So it's on brand. It's on point. this wine is called Svelato, S-V-E-L-A-T-O. And this is a Falanghina from a single vineyard site called Sanio. And we've had this in the shop before. This was a glass pour for us for a little bit last summer, I believe. This is one of my favorite Campanian wines. It's been a true companion for me over the year. I'm sorry, that was a dad joke that I said in front of Guthrie, but I think he's got earbuds in and didn't hear me. Oh, he did hear me. You didn't hear that dad joke? I said this wine has been a true companion for me this year.
I have so much
support. Yeah, I know. It gets better, trust me. Or does it? I don't know. This is I'm going to just quickly revisit this. Man, you can, like, just taste, smell the sea on this. It's just, like, citrus and sea salt on the nose. Yeah, that's nice. When it's on your tongue, it kind of hits, it kind of flattens out a little bit and gets a little floral. Still got some, like, kind of bright, like, almost like lime zest, grapefruit kind of thing going on.
A little green apple, like tartness.
Yeah, some, like, green apple tartness. I think there's, like, you get Vaseline-y thing on this? Yeah. It's got
it smells a little bit like Vaseline. Maybe that's just
yeah,
hopes and dreams. You know?
Yeah, man. I get a little bit of wildflower on this. for some of the floral aspects. There is some kind of like herbal floral thing going on here, which is definitely not atypical for a Falanghina. But this is a great wine to eat, or it's a great wine to eat. Wow, I do a wine podcast. This is a great wine to pair with, obviously, like anything Italian, anything seafood. It's even like really nice with this cheese. It's a hopeful springtime kind of white for us right now. You know, for a moment, I forgot that there's, you know, an invasion in Ukraine happening right now. I'm transported to somewhere on the Amalfi Coast. Yeah, this is a lovely white that we like here. What did I put on the description here? A whiff of pineapple and wildflower honey. The palate adds hazelnuts and clove, finishes with mouth-watering brightness. Yeah, it's good. Come in and try some. Let out your inner witch. Or ward off, maybe you're warding off curses with drinking this wine. We're going to be getting into some other magical properties of Italian beverages in a few minutes on the show. Yeah, this is great. I'm into this. I would point you to their website, but they don't have one yet. So take our word for it. Yeah, these are great. Yeah, it apparently won a Tre Bicchieri Award last year. So, you know, there's that. They have a lot going on for them. I actually did try a couple other wines by this producer on Wednesday when I was down there. Both really good. I think one was a Greco, and I also tried an Alianico, which was pretty nice. So we'll see. We might be able to work with these guys a little bit more. But this was a big crowd pleaser for us last year, and it's one of my favorite Italian whites right now, so I'm sure there'll be some around. But come in and try it. It's great. The next one we have is one of our featured glass pours. So a little bit more per glass, but generally these are, you know, things that are harder to get or a little more rare or a little more expensive. And, you know, if we can glass pour them, we like to kind of put those out in front of you guys. We're going to be kind of zooming all the way up north to Piedmont for this next wine, up to Langhe. This is a Nebbiolo from 2019. And I don't know what I love always initially about Nebbiolo is just the color of it. Like it looks kind of like rusty, like red and rusty, a little like orangey brickish hue on the outside. Like if you tip your glass over, not all the way over, but just enough to kind of, spread the wine out in your glass and you hold it over like a white sheet of paper around the edges of this wine. You can really start to see some color change happen. It's a little young, so there's a little bit of like clearness on the very, very edge. But this is a Langhe Nebbiolo, again, with the cheese that we're trying today, although it's Spanish. I'm anticipating that this will still work pretty nicely together. Guthrie's like looking at me like, we'll see about that. It's also really, it's awkward for me to do this show.
I want to contribute. While you're
here, but.
You did a good job. I mean.
I'll kind of move this.
Yeah, I mean, I can. We can talk in the same mic, right?
Yeah, it'll be like we're in a band together.
We are in a band together.
We are in a band together. Dude.
This smells awesome right now.
This smells great.
I don't think I've tasted this since we got it, and I had just popped the bottle, and it was a little closed off, but this is...
This kind of smells like when you get a new pair of shoes, like Nikes.
You love the new shoes.
I love it. I do.
Yeah.
Like,
I wonder what that is, though. It's a thing.
It's a thing.
That you find.
I don't mean to sound like one of those douchey guys from the Somme documentary, but, like, it's... If you were ever a kid and were lucky enough to have, like, Nike Airs in the 90s or whatever...
What is the smell? Is that the smell of, like, asphalt? Kind of like a,
it smells like a rubber like sole to me, yeah, or like something.
Hot rubber,
kind of like
burnt tire a little.
Not like burnt, but like fresh.
Yeah,
you know, or even like when you go to like a auto body.
Yeah, tar.
Tar, but I like.
I mean, that's like the one like. It's like a standard tasting of Nebbiolo.
Yeah,
I know what you mean. I don't go right to that. For me, it was more of like the raspberry, but also like a tomato leaf, bay leaf, ooh, like a little bit.
There is a little vegetal note
it's
to this.
On this wine. It's not ripe, but there's a little bit of that like Mediterranean sort of.
It's aromatic. Almost like, yeah, it's almost like a sun-dried tomato vibe, but like with
but mostly like
herbs.
Raspberry over the top, like ripe raspberry jam.
You know what? It tastes pretty damn good, too. This wine has a really beautiful structure to it. It's got some nicely integrated tannins. It's got some red fruit up front with a little backdrop of dried herbs.
A little bit already of like sort of a... dried out, like desiccated leafy.
That's gonna be the title of your
leafy
memoir.
More like
desiccated and leafy, the Guthrie Newman story.
Fertilizer, man, the Logan. Have
you ever driven over the Hone Bridge? Yeah, this is a really cool. Like, for how young it is, it's really complex. There's a lot going on here. I think every sip that I've taken has been a little different, which, you know, I love that. That's what I love about good wine. This is a great food wine. What can't you eat with this?
Could eat anything.
Yeah, technically, I guess you could physically eat anything with it, but...
Like, I don't know if, like, just, like, raw almonds might not be a great
thing. Yeah.
Some with a little fat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're going to want a little, you know, you're going to want a little fat with this because of those tannins and those acidity here. This is a really well-balanced wine. I would totally jam on this if I was
wine,
here.
Is
what's
that? A dried oregano. It's a pizza wine.
Yeah, but it's like wine. It's like if you're, you know, springing for the good pie,
yeah.
You know, like.
But yeah,
any pie will do. Any pizza pie.
I was just gonna say, who doesn't spring for the good pie? I mean, I am partial to frozen pizza.
Yeah, I'll slum it if I have to. I prefer not to, but yeah. There's almost like a little bit of like a roasty, it's not like dark chocolate on the finish, but there's something kind of like rich. I don't know. It's like a, cacao thing. Cacao.
I love Nebbiolo.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of it's just fun for people to taste because it's a little bit deceiving. It's light in color, but very, it's like something when people ask for a full-bodied wine, I'll pour them Nebbiolo, and it's so pale.
Right.
Like, this looks like Pinot Noir or something. But you're like, just taste it. Yeah. It's got significant tannin. It's got a lot of alcohol.
Yeah.
A lot of flavor. It's, they're big.
Yeah, like
a burly wine.
Yeah, like I said at this, elegant at the start, and burly. It looks light and deceivingly light. It almost bricky, orangey in color. But when it gets onto your palate, it's just layers of complexity and yeah. like weight and texture and acidity. It's
like a figure skater or something. Like they look kind of wimpy, but they probably got like a six pack and pecs.
They could probably underneath
their gown.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Yeah. It's like this dude wearing like the weirdest like onesie thing who could totally kick my ass. Yeah. Yeah. That's actually a really nice way to describe Nebbiolo. Like that, yeah. That's hilarious and also true. So Guthrie, since you're here, I brought in a thing from my house. I brought in an Amaro from my house. I have never tried this before. And I pulled up the web page because it's kind of weird. I bought this when I was in Italy a few weeks ago. And when I'm there, I generally try to find weird shit that I can't get here, especially of the Amaro variety. And just so you guys know, like Amaro is like a category of spirit. It's like a fortified spirit, generally made like with secret concoctions of herbs and barks and roots and all that stuff. And it's kind of a after dinner spirit. A lot of these come with very like probably made up origin stories to, you know, keep the recipes a secret or whatever. If you've ever had anything like Fernet, Fernet is a sort of Amaro. It's more of an elixir.
Amaro is like a pretty broad umbrella.
Yeah.
With under which you might have like something like Campari and Aperol.
Right.
Or Fernet, which is a stronger, drier yeah. type of
yes.
Amaro. It just means bitter.
Aperitifs, digestifs, the whole umbrella. It
doesn't have to be Italian either.
Right. Technically, like Jägermeister is an Amaro.
Yeah.
Gross.
Just kidding. I know. I think when I got into Amaro, I started trying Jäger again. Like, oh, maybe I'll like it now that I yeah. know more like what it is, but it's still gross.
Yeah, it's
not,
like...
not my fave.
I know. It's like, for me, it's like, if I ever dabbled with cigarettes, like, maybe I should try this Chew.
Yeah.
Like, nope. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a hater. Anyway, this stuff is called Ebo Lebo. E-B-O. L-E-B-O.
Bolabo.
This is the Gran Reserva. An ancient legend, whose origin is lost in the mists of time, tells of how the Salassi, ancient and bold inhabitants of the Aosta Valley, made use of a powerful potion. This magical filter gave indomitable courage and superhuman strength to the Salassi soldiers who took it before the battles. By the way, I think there's some rough translation on this website from the Italian to the English. I'm just reading it straight off.
I do like the idea of taking alcohol.
Yeah.
So yes. imbibing in it.
Yeah.
They took it.
They took this.
Like dropping alcohol.
Yeah, dude. Are you hooked on alcohol? Thanks to these particular benefits, it allowed them to resist the invasion of the impetuous Roman armies for many decades. Those pesky Romans, always getting into people's business. If you don't know about the Aosta Valley, this is essentially one of the highest points in Europe. This is where Italy, Switzerland, and France meet. It's like, you know, the valley kind of right near Mont Blanc. Just as a little geographic reference point for you. It goes on to say, for the Salassi, the magic drink was a medicine against all hurts. It was used especially before facing trials that required energy, boldness, and courage. Things such as war, hunting, or making love. So it's a Viagra of sorts. Viagra and steroids.
It's like the oldest form of marketing.
Yeah. You make sex really good with this. The years passed. The people succeeded each other, but the magic linked to the mysterious drink did not disappear. In fact, in the following millennia, Abelebo was the name with which, for a long time, the Grassoni Valley people called the Achillea millefolium, a bitter herb with magical digestive and stimulating qualities, which takes its name from the Homeric hero Achilles, who used it to heal the wounds sustained in battle. Shit, man. That's awesome.
Achilles 1,000 leaves?
Yeah. Yeah. I believe it's yarrow, if I'm not mistaken. Today, the legend lives on with Abelebo Gran Reserva. This new product, dedicated to the most refined palates, still remains the liqueur of the past with extraordinary powers and obtained through the wise and secret dosage of infusions of numerous herbs. However, in addition to tradition, it also represents innovation. Since the original recipe is enriched with the addition of genipi and saffron, cultivated in the Aosta Valley by the Rosette Terroir Farm. Thanks to them, Abelebo has exceptional tonic and digestive characteristics without detracting anything from its full taste and its unmistakable aroma. It's like Sex Panther from Anchorman.
Oh, yeah.
Over the years, the liqueur has conquered both the national and international market, not sure about that, and is now enjoying great success in the United States.
Let's not talk about conquering.
Yeah.
Yeah. Conquering K.
If you drink this, you too can wrestle bears like Vladimir Putin. In order to obtain the maximum effect of the magical qualities of Abelebo, it is recommended to always pronounce the magic formula Abelebo 3 times before taking it. So we're going to try this out. We shall see. If Guthrie and I start making out after this, you'll know that it's definitely for real. The color is really nice.
Abelebo.
Definitely get some of that saffron-y color. Oh, yeah. Abelebo. 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 All right. Let's do it. Whoa! Wow.
Ooh, hotter than I expected.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, 36%. I was expecting like 18.
Yeah, it's a little... It's
like a good Fernet.
Yeah. It's like Fernet with more body.
Yeah.
It's
a little more elegant than Fernet, I mean.
You're definitely getting that barky finish. Like medicinal barky finish that you get with a lot of Fernets.
Orange. Orange peel.
Just like
orange and just a wintergreen, sort of like a root beery.
Yep, definitely root beery.
Sassafras, wintergreen, mint, spearmint.
Wow, I can feel my
apricot pit maybe or cherry kind of on the palate.
Yeah. I can feel myself getting stronger. Like, I think it's working.
Too strong.
Dude.
I like it. If I saw this, I would definitely have this after dinner.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely got, like, some heft to it. And, I don't know, I'd probably put just, like, a small ice cube in it to kind of open it up because it is like a really dense. It's like very dense.
It's a whiskey drinker's amaro.
Yeah, for sure. Honestly, I bet like if you put a little like mix this with a little whiskey, it'd make a really nice Manhattan. You know,
definitely.
Like a nice winter.
Or just took out the whiskey and just mixed this with vermouth.
Yeah, maybe.
My style.
Yeah. You too can beat back the Roman hordes. I don't know. Yeah. This is fun. I'm probably going to leave this bottle here. So, you know, if you guys are listening to this episode and you want to come in and try it, you can. This would like sit on my shelf at home probably for like a long time.
Well, and you're unique in that sense that alcohol can sit around at your
well, house on your shelf. Yeah, but I'm just here, and then I just have stuff here.
Yeah,
you know.
By the time you get home.
Yeah, but it's by the time I put my kids to bed, I'm like ready to fall asleep. I think I like, man, I'm just getting old. It's okay. I can't party like I used to, and I probably shouldn't party like I used to, because I don't know.
Party pretty good for narcoleptic.
Yeah, yeah. I can fall asleep almost anywhere at any time. So, you know, staying up till like 11 is like really good for me. But this stuff is cool. I like it. I think this is like imported by Joe Bastianich's group. So it might be mainly like an Italy thing. But yeah, come in and try it out if it's still here by the time you listen to this episode. Man, one last little bit of shop talk here. We have been on a little bit of an Italian theme today. We have kind of reconfigured our monthly wine club like subscription thing here called Explorers Club. And we this month in March, we are doing island wines, which is really fun. There's a ton of little islands throughout the Mediterranean and far eastern Atlantic that produce some of the best, most stunning, most craziest wines in the world. A lot of these wines tend to be volcanic in nature, so you get like really vivid expressions of terroir, and you know it's hard to choose from all of them. Just Greece alone has like 72 islands, and not that all of them produce wine, but I mean, we're talking about like islands off the coast of Morocco all the way to islands off the coast of Syria. So there's a large geographical swath of area to cover this. I believe that this month is focusing on some of the bigger ones like Sicily and Sardinia.
No, Sicily for sure. And then Mallorca.
Ah, Mallorca. So yeah.
So a small one and a big one.
Still
figuring out the other one.
Yeah. We're excited about this. These are, like I said, just really unique geographical and geological places to source wines from. When I get back from San Francisco, I will be doing a little kind of like tasting day with some snacks, like Sicilian style snacks. That is going to be on the 12th, the 12th of March. So coming up in a couple weeks, I have to come up with a cool name for it, but it'll be on the Instagram. But if you listen to this podcast, you get to hear about it first. So we're basically going to be kind of like pouring some carafes of some cool Sicilian wines, and I'll be making some like little like cicchetti kind of Italian happy hour style snacks with that stuff. So yeah, it's going to be fun. We love Sicilian wine here. We like volcanic wine in general. I think it's just a really fun kind of subcategory. And if you're not signed up for the Explorers Club, dude, get on it. It's getting to be really fun. We have three different levels of subscriptions that you can sign on for. You know, you can do two bottles a month for $49.99, and we you know, and you can go up from there. We do up to 6 bottles a month. We also include a map so you know where the hell the wines come from. We give you some really detailed notes from the winemakers. We give you some pairing suggestions, and we even find really rad and easy to make recipes for you so that you can kind of do what we do here and just pair really cool food with really delicious wine. We make it easy for you people. But yeah, that said, if you want to kind of experience some of those flavors, come in on the 12th and hang out with us. It's going to be really casual. It's not like a ticketed thing or anything like that. It's not free, but we'll make it within reach of everyone. So we want you all to come down and experience the magic of Mount Etna with us. Damn, we had some good flavors here today. I'm happy about that. I'm going to go home and pack up my shit and, I don't know, jet off to somewhere out west with no snow. It'll be cool. Guthrie, thank you for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. It's good to be here. Good. Always.
For now. Dude, I'm excited to see what this baby's name is.
Little Jordy.
Little Jordy. Man, I knew you were gonna pick that name. I just had a feeling. Best of luck to you, sir. I probably will not see you until afterwards, but
yep. That's true.
Everybody out there, be good to yourselves. Get outside, enjoy the last little bit of winter, and yeah, stay tuned for all of the fun changes happening here. There's new stuff in every week, and whether it's food or wine or weird stories, we have it all at Voyager. Thanks for listening. See you on Friday. I'll give you guys a recap of my trip, and I'll have some pics up on the Instagram as well. So stay tuned, and yeah. Chef's kiss.